That's Blues Jams with Bill Jennings on guitar, Jack McDuff on organ, Wendell Marshall on bass, and Bill Elliott on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Tuesday, February the 19th, and I'm looking forward to your input today on this program because it is open forum. We haven't had a chance to get into debates and discussions with each other in a full way for a while, so that's what we're going to do today. We'll be taking a look at two cases that we've been discussing quite often. One is the Benghazi obsession by the Republicans, and then the other we'll finish off with our discussion on Christopher Dorner. Well, the Republicans, as you know, did succeed in stalling the Democrats, and especially the president, with respect to his nomination of the replacement for Mr. Leon Panetta at the Department of Defense, Chuck Hagel. And they used a tactic, and the tactic apparently worked, but of course it caused a lot of folks to grind their gears and not really happy with the Republicans right now. The Republicans said that this was the opportunity that they had to take because they've been asking for questions on answers on Benghazi. Their questions have gone unanswered, and they persist because they said 4 Americans died. There have been no rational explanations or thorough explanations, and this is coming from people who are sitting on the Senate Intelligence Committee, which is the committee that has oversight of all of these agencies involved in intelligence and national security. In the forefront of this fight have been people like John McCain. Lindsey from South Carolina, Lindsey Graham. You have Kelly Ayotte from New Hampshire, and others. But these are the people who have been very, very much in the front of the line on this question. Let's take a look. A rather contentious discussion that Senator McCain got into on Meet the Press with David Gregory on Sunday regarding his insistence that there is a cover-up.
It's striking, though, Senator, because some members are saying, look, we need more time to look at his speeches to see if he really is anti-Israel. Others are saying, no, we're going to use this moment of leverage to get more information about Benghazi, about what the president said, who he called the night of the attack, or getting some of the emails about who changed the talking points. The president said this week on the issue of Benghazi, you guys are running out of things to ask about. So let me ask you, at the end of the day here on Benghazi, if the worst thing is true, what is that truth about how the president handled this crisis?
I don't know the answer to that question. I do know that there's so many answers we don't know. For example, what did the president do the night of the attack? We know he met with the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff on another issue and then never talked to them again. We know that the Secretary of State, who said she was clear-eyed, never saw the warnings about the fact that the consulate could not withstand an attack. Why was that? We don't even still know who's. We've had 5 different versions of who put together the talking points. We want to know why the president alleged to Mitt Romney in a debate that he had called it a terrorist attack when he hadn't, and in an interview that very night of September 12th, he'd said he didn't know what it was, and for 2 weeks later kept saying he didn't know what kind of attack it was. And in testimony, the Secretary of Defense and Chief of Staff, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, both said they knew that night. There's so many questions about Benghazi. We've had 2 movies about getting bin Laden, and we don't even know who the people were who were evacuated from the consulate consulate the next day after the attack. So there are many, many questions, and we have had a massive cover-up on the part of
But a massive cover-up of what? I mean, Susan Rice, wait a minute, Susan Rice said there was a lot of confusion.
Do you care, David?
I'm asking you, Senator, what is the cover-up of what?
I'm asking you, do you care? I'm asking you, do you care whether four Americans died? The reasons for that? And shouldn't people be held accountable for the fact that four Americans died?
Or what? You said there's a cover-up. A cover-up of what? I'm just asking you, a cover-up of what?
Of the information concerning the deaths of four brave Americans. The information has not been forthcoming. You can obviously believe that it has. I know that it hasn't. And I'll be glad to send you a list of the questions that have not been answered, including what did the president do and who did he talk to the night of the attack on Benghazi? And why was it? Why was it that the people who were evacuated from the consulate the next day were not interviewed the next day? And then they would have known that it was not a spontaneous demonstration. Why did the president for two weeks during the heat of a campaign continue to say he didn't know whether it was a terrorist attack or not? Is it because it interfered with the line of Al-Qaeda is decimated and everything's fine in that part of the world? Maybe. We don't know. But we need the answers. Then we'll reach conclusions. But we have not received the answers, and that's a fact.
Senator, just...
So, are Republicans on the side of right when they claim a massive cover-up on Benghazi and therefore entitled to interrupt or obstruct the business of government in pursuit of these allegations? Or is this their way of continuing the do-nothing strategy, blocking Obama at every turn in his second term so that by the time his term is over, he would have had little to show in the way of accomplishments for his two terms in office? What are you saying? What is your thought on this question? 1-888-874-4888. 874-4888. Hello, we have John from Brooklyn. You're up first, John, today.
Hello.
Hello.
How are we doing?
Good. And you?
Yeah, I've been following this for quite some time now, ever since it started coming up. And apparently, the whole thing focuses on what... when did the president know it? When did he know it? You know, basically on the night of September 11th, just as the attacks were coming in, they actually knew immediately that they were being attacked by terrorists. And but they don't want to really admit that because the story that they came out with was that, you know, it was some sort of demonstration. So, and even was it Susan Rice, the ambassador, even went on the talk shows and said it was a demonstration when actually it was a terrorist attack. But that's not the point. The point was, on the night of the attack, they knew what was going on, and Stevens was asking for help, and he wasn't getting any help. And at one point, the president said that he ordered that they get help, but apparently nothing happened for 7 hours. They knew that they were under attack, and the military was immobilized to help them, and it wasn't until much later that that they did get help.
Do you think the Republicans are making way too much of this, or as Hillary Clinton said, you know, we had four dead people, we gotten over it, just get over it and let's move on here?
Well, Hillary wants to cover her own ass also, that's the thing. Because she wants to deny responsibility. She probably knew that night what was going on, but she's saying that she didn't know anything and that it didn't filter up to her, so she can deny responsibility.
So yes. Should Republicans stay on the course with this? Should they continue to press for answers, or should they just, you know, say, well, look, we need the answers, but we are not going to hold things up anymore. Let's keep moving along.
Well, I think
for fear that they will alienate people.
They are going to move things along because I think a lot of this is just sour grapes. They didn't really utilize the issue effectively during the campaign, the election campaign, which they could have, and they basically flubbed the dub on that. If they actually pressed the issue more and got the facts out, they may have changed the results of the election. But now they're saying, oh, we missed... getting all the facts out. Now, Gary is saying there's a lot more going on here with Benghazi. Gary is saying that we're actually sending, that Stevens was over there organizing Al-Qaeda to send troops over to Syria. This is a there's a whole Syrian connection.
And yes, that's been alleged. That's a huge part of the story. And I think, in fact, we did have a question to Hillary Clinton when she did testify. The question was asked, what was the compound used for?
Yeah, well, that's
Was she aware that it was a transshipment point for weapons to Syria? And she was so startled by the question. She said, Syria? Really? I have to check on that.
No, no. And basically, it was a CIA operation. The reason why they were in Benghazi because of the CIA compound. That annex over there was just basically a space they rented out, sort of, so they can really talk. That wasn't really guarded. It really wasn't an official consulate. It was just a space they rented out. There was really no security there. The real security was in the CIA base.
Okay, John, here's a question to you. Here's a challenge to you. Now, whether one agrees with the ideology of the Republican Party and so forth, do you think that there should be an encouragement on the part of the population, the United States, just Americans, saying we need to know more and the Republicans are onto something, or should we just see how, you know, be spectators to this thing and be on the sidelines and see how it all works out?
Well, the thing is, I think the truth should be out, you know, but, you know, and this is what the Republicans are on the side of the truth coming out about what's going on. But the danger is, basically, I just want to make the point about the CIA base. That was basically a CIA base. Nobody was supposed to have known about that base. People don't want to know that. What's going on? So the more they talk about this and about the operation, it's sort of like there's a lot of state secrets are going to be revealed, and basically the Republicans are stepping in it. So I don't think that they're not going to be able to pursue this much longer.
All right. Thank you so much, John, for your contribution today. You got us started off in a really strong way. Thanks so much.
Okay.
888-874-4888. Are the Republicans onto something? Should they persist? Should they continue to ask these questions? And should they get support from the people to continue to press the question? 888-874-4888. Let me hear what you're thinking. This is your open forum on Lead Stories. I do have a couple of things to announce, but I'm waiting for your calls, and we can chit-chat while we wait for your calls here. I wanted to thank you so much. I got a lot of feedback on some of the shows of last week, so much so that I couldn't get to answer them all, but I've tried to answer as many as I could, and I will get to the rest of them today. So thank you for that, and thank you for your words of encouragement. It's fantastic, really. It keeps me going. You wouldn't believe how wonderful it is to receive such kind words. It's wonderful. Thank you so much. 888-874-4888. You know, this is an awkward moment in a way, because we do have some facts we can't ignore. The Democrats don't like the Republicans. The Republicans don't like the Democrats. There is a history of bad blood from the first term of Obama's administration. They are gathering steam, and I think part of it, too, is testing the waters. Are people going to – is there going to be a popular support for – getting the answers and closing the books on this question? For as long as the administration continues to resist, and as long as you see, they get a very sympathetic ear, as they did on Face the Nation from the host of the program, Mr. Gregory, you feel comfortable taking sides on this? Rudy, what are you thinking? Hello, Rudy.
Correct. The president is correct that he doesn't know who did it because they haven't found the people who did do it. Even the police can't, if they don't find the people who did it, don't know really who did it. And the other thing that bothers me about Senator McCain is he's acting as if the world stood still while this thing was going on in Benghazi. They had problems with a dictatorship in North Korea that was threatening to bomb a portion of the United States. They also had problems going on in Syria and in Mali. The president did the right thing. He consulted with his Joint Chiefs of Staff. He spent 40 minutes with them. He has a lot going on, and because he didn't call them until the next day, doesn't mean that they weren't doing anything.
But the question is about the relationship between the Senate Intelligence Committee and the president, the Senate as a whole, considering that any issues involving the military, involving acts of war and so forth, they're supposed to know. But we heard Leon Panetta say he did not hear from the president and the president didn't call him. You heard the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff say exactly the same thing. There was a 24-hour period where nobody knew where the president was, and nobody contacted them. They said it. The White House didn't contact them. They didn't contact the White House, and all hell was breaking loose in Benghazi.
Yes, but all hell is breaking loose in Mali. It's also breaking loose possibly in North Korea. They might even attack South Korea. There were a lot of problems. These intelligence committees have an enormous amount of information. They don't have to. The president doesn't have to be. Once he's given his instructions and they've spoken to the Joint Chiefs of Staff, there's not much more he can do. He doesn't have a gun. He's not on a horse.
But Rudy, he is the commander in chief, and he didn't have a chance to give any orders. That's what they testified to. They said when they met that day, the 5 o'clock meeting that they had, they were actually. That was a pre-scheduled meeting, and they were discussing Egypt about crowds gathering outside of the U.S. Embassy in Egypt. They used 20, Panetta said, about 20 minutes of the 30-minute meeting was about Egypt. Benghazi didn't really show up on that list because probably the attack had not begun yet at the time that they were meeting. At the same token, the Senate is saying, since they are the people who are to advise and consent in matters of war, this is not just a situation where people were thinking of attacking. This was a real bona fide attack. And not just an attack, it was an attack that resulted in the death of an ambassador. This is huge. This is a big, big thing. Every country would get upset about that. So are the Republicans right in staying the course, or should they just, cut and run and do whatever else, tackle this in a different venue?
My question is, who benefited? And I can't see really who benefited from this attack. It doesn't make sense. So my point is that the Senate has an agenda to humiliate the president, to cause him to pass legislation under which he would not normally pass, by the threat of the Senate to when you destroy a president, you make him lose office. I think that is their agenda.
Impeach.
Yes, I apologize. Yes, you're right. Uh-huh. Impeach the president. That's my opinion.
Well, that's a very strong opinion, and thank you so much for it. Thanks
you're
for contributing,
welcome.
Rudy. Thank you. Thank you. All right. So we have one and one. We have a tie, sort of, one and one. This is a a central question about the constitutional relationship between Congress and the president. That's one level. We know all the other levels. That this is also a game of one-upmanship, you know, who is going to get the better of the other and first. The third thing is a neutral kind of position where the issue really should be, we should know everything that happened. Senator McCain has said, for example, the Senate has not even been given the names. They don't know who it was, who was actually rescued. Several people were rescued. Who are they? What became of them? What are their names? Why can't they come forward and be asked to testify about what they witnessed and what they experienced as the compound came under attack? What do they know about the compound? These people just vanished. Several people were said to have been rescued, but they just vanished. Nobody knows where they are. Nobody knows who they are. Nobody knows what they experienced. So there's a lot of cloak and dagger stuff going on. Was this, in fact, a transshipment point for weapons received from Libya and going to Syria? Hillary Clinton said she was just astonished. She said, you've got to be kidding me, in other words. She says, this couldn't possibly be the case. Pat, what are you thinking today?
The line of questioning should be pursued. The reason I think this is, according to what Gary Null said, they were operating a house of execution and assassination out of Benghazi, and the administration knew that.
Well, I hadn't heard about the execution and so forth. I had heard, and it was alleged in several reports, that it was a transshipment point. It was a place where weapons were stashed for, to go into Syria to fund the rebel movement there. But you think they should continue the line of questioning? They should continue to press forward?
Absolutely, because this is just something that I heard from Gary's show, and that essentially whatever happened over there was because the local people found out what was going on there, and that that's also one of the reasons why Brennan was chosen by the president, because he was part of all of that and he knew about it. So throwing Susan Rice under the bus also, you know, the whole thing just ties in so neatly, because then that eliminates her as Secretary of State, and John Kerry is there. There's no competition for Susan Rice. And, you know, the entire business that was going on over there just needs to be investigated and find out what's going on. That's what I would like to see happen.
Do you feel that you personally like you need to know?
Absolutely. I totally want to know, especially since I'm not in any way happy with Obama's performance. I was shocked when he got a Nobel Prize and immediately put in 30,000 more troops in Afghanistan. That was such a contradiction when he put Larry Summers in his position in the very beginning. And from my point of view, is Larry Summers is one of the people that caused the problem. So, you know, I'd really like to see Obama be investigated in all of this. The extraordinary rendition that's going on out of, you know, the Middle East is something that, as far as I know, he's hasn't put an end to. And, I think that this whole business that's been going on in Benghazi is just the tip of the iceberg, and that we should find out what's happening there.
Well, thank you very much, Pat. Thanks so much for contributing.
And thank you so much for talking about all this stuff. I mean, you're the person that I first heard that Hillary Clinton did not actually faint and hurt herself, but that she was actually trying to rendezvous with the Iranian president. So, you know, thank you also for the information that you give to us.
Thank you. I got that from some sources of websites that routinely cover the intelligence community. And I haven't seen an update on that since, including the death, the supposed suicide of one of the people who was supposed to be with her. I'm looking for more information on that. I haven't seen anything since that report. Thank you, though, Pat, for calling. All right. We've gotten to the halfway mark, and it's a good time to take a little break. When we come back, we'll take a look at the other question that we want to sound ourselves out about. This is Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and your thoughts on the next leg of the race. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. We started talking about Christopher Dorner, the former police officer of the Los Angeles Police Department, who, having been dismissed from the force, was just brooding about this and angry about it. And it resulted in a very bad situation. It still gets me, you know. It still gets me because you see it happening before it actually happens. But in any event, he was killed. We don't know how he died. That is still going to be determined. But before he was killed, or before he died, he killed four people because he had declared war on the Los Angeles Police Department, the entire department, because of a situation that happened with him. He reported that he had witnessed a supervisor kicking a detainee who was mentally ill and took the appropriate steps to report it. When it went to departmental trial, in fact, the guns were turned literally on him. He was found to have made false statements. The supervisor was not punished, and he was out of the force. In a very long, 23-page statement that he made, which is being called the manifesto, he detailed that the thing that put him over the edge was that he was lied about, and his name was impugned, his reputation was impugned, and he said that a person without a good name, if you really don't stand for a good name, you don't stand for anything at all. But he went on a rampage and killed four people by the time a massive manhunt caught up with him in a cabin. A single shot was heard within the cabin, but by then, canisters of tear gas were shot into the building and it burned to the ground, his body in it. So, the question that we started talking about was the connection, is racism a thing that could drive you mad? Is it that lethal an effect on people? Was he mentally impaired by racism? How do you see Christopher Dorner? How is he to be classified, given his actions and his own so-called justification for them in his manifesto? Is racism an appropriate or relevant defense for murder? given that he declared a declaration of war as a former police officer against the police force? Was he an assassin? Was he an enemy combatant? Was he a megalomaniac who felt entitled to take summary action because things just didn't go his way? How are we to interpret this event? How are we to regard the role of racism in this particular situation? Michael from New Jersey, what is your thought on that?
Hi, Utrecht. It's always
Hello.
A pleasure.
Thank you.
It's hard to know. Firstly, let me say that I have not read the manifesto. I didn't see it published, and then it probably was, but I don't know what it said exactly. But I think that, you know, there are a variety of reasons that can drive a person to the brink and then over the brink. And I don't see why racism shouldn't be one of them as a reason. I heard one commentator on the television saying that, you know, there's no justification for this. Of course there isn't. But she's saying there are ways to protest. There are other avenues to direct this. But I don't think that there really are in terms of the police and what he was dealing with there. I don't really believe he had a means of protest or a way to remediate his situation or get remediation or get any justice. So, I mean, then it came down to a question of his own self and dealing with himself, and he wasn't able to do that. That's the upshot of it. But you know, racism is still very, very virulent, and I don't think it hasn't improved that much over many years. I read a publication about MIT, a study that they did that said blacks and Hispanics waited on average two times as long as whites to vote in the past election. And in fact, in Florida, they said 299,000 people just left those lines and did not vote at all. So, I think in the end, we have to judge, you know, I think that democracy is a very thin layer on top of our society. And I don't think it exists really. And I think we should be judged by how far away from democracy we are. And I think we're very far from that right now. I think as far as Dorner is concerned, I think it's tragic. I think that's what you can say about it.
I think we all share that view that it is a tragic event. What I'm trying to get at is, at the time that he engaged in this activity, the time he decided he was just going to declare war, his life was over. He, in fact, it said in his manifesto he didn't expect to live, and he was not going to be taken alive. So he made up his mind that this is what he was going to do.
Right.
Is that the suggestion of a person who is conscious, making a conscious political statement, or is this a person at that point who has crossed over into the world of insanity?
Well, I think it's a thin line between those two worlds. You know, is he a political figure? Did he see himself as a political figure? Are we to judge him and base our opinions about this incident based on him being a political figure? I think politics is based on power and self-interest, and basically, I think that those things fall in line with insanity, too.
So here's a question to you.
Okay.
If you were a white cop, would you be spending this much time thinking that deeply about it?
You mean if he were a white cop?
Yeah.
Would we be
talking about it?
Well, I think we just, you know, it's hard to say where racism enters into this. I see where you're going with this, but it's hard for me to get there. If he's a white cop, then he suffered an injustice as well. And if he goes crazy and shoots some people, he's going to be in the paper as well, and he's going to be sort of like the Unabomber, who was a white figure who saw
would
himself.
Would you be inclined to be sympathetic?
Well, people weren't very sympathetic to the Unabomber, and he.
No, I'm talking about Dorner.
Well, Dorner. Well, yeah, people definitely saw him as a political figure, because you can see that people, the reaction they had some protests, etc. People were backing him up, and at least what he stood for, what they thought he stood for, they kind of made him into a martyr of some kind, and they were recognizing him as a political figure. Those people were, obviously. And they were supporting him as somebody who suffered not only racism, but, institutional injustice, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, in that sense, yes, he definitely, his effect was that he had a political effect. We have to say that based on the aftermath and the reaction and people supporting, and other people really condemning what he did. So he definitely had a political, he entered into the political discourse, and more so than he entered into the mental health discourse. I haven't heard too many, I heard a lot of talking head experts in medical health talking about this.
No, I didn't either.
I think it's more of the political part of it. And I think they tried to really dispense with it pretty quickly as well. Actually, I don't hear it that much anymore. And I think it deserves a deeper and a broader discussion. Based on the issues that you're bringing up.
Well, thank you. Thanks a lot. That was a great contribution.
Thank you.
Michael. Bye. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. See, things are not that simple when you start to analyze them and force ourselves to think in different ways. But I would like to know what you're thinking. Was he, Dorner, at the time that he decided this was going to be the outcome, he had orchestrated everything the way he felt it ought to go, and it was deadly. At that moment, would you say he was in his right mind, or was he already on the other side of sanity? Did racism drive him there, or was he just a person who decided that he didn't get his way, so he will have his revenge? Is he a political figure, or is he a megalomaniac, a guy who thinks that the world is all about him? What are your thoughts? And with respect to the police, fighting the police, that's another angle. Was he really out for justice, or was he out for revenge? And if you were defending him in a court of law, how would you paint this man? How would you present the case for this man? Who would you say you were defending? These are really tough questions. I'd love to hear your answers. 888 877-474-4888. We've gotten quite a few excellent contributions today. I like this kind of stuff. And we will, you know, intensify it and keep going until we become the master debaters and thinkers of the universe. That's what that's what we're going to do. This is a very complex case, and I started talking about it in the context of the parallel case that I personally did have a contact with, and that was with the Colin Ferguson case. Paul from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Oh, wow. I think I'm having a Rubio moment, so I have to get some water. A truth moment. Thank you, truth.
That was just so pitiful to see that man reach for, you know, he was going having a rough time.
Well, I was being pitiful. I needed the water. I'm speaking to you, truth.
So if you were an attorney, let's suppose you had to defend Christopher Dorner, what would you say this man was? This man who did such a brutal thing?
Oh, wow, Eutrice, you did that to me? Just change it up on me like that? Okay, let me see.
Well, but start where you're most comfortable. Go ahead.
I will take that challenge. I would say that he was impacted to such a degree by racism that it changed his outlook and how he dealt with society. He felt he had no other recourse, and it just built up. And I know I can deal with it, definitely. But you know what I was also wondering is, was he under any type of medical care? I just can't help wondering anytime I hear those kinds of things of people taking matters into their own hands. I think it's something that can happen. People can do it without medical intervention. But
do you think he was
so much suicidal ideation and homicidal ideation to them? I just can't help. I think it's logical to wonder.
But do you think because he laid his case out in his manifesto, was he a sane person doing a very in some people's heads, this would be a bizarre way to link it as a political act, or had he gone over on the other side?
Well, the Unabomber was mentioned, and some other people throughout history have been doing things. What's the fella in Omaha? I think it was Omaha. Anyway, there was another young fellow who was in the military who had done something similar. He bombed some children, I believe, a daycare or something. And he constructed it as a political act. And it was widely accepted as such. And he was interviewed by some notable figures, and they took him seriously. So based upon that, why can it not be both?
What do you really, really think personally, Paul?
Well, you know, you talked about the president and you talked about the Benghazi. I don't have all the information. And that's, I think, what's so important about getting all the information. Again, I mentioned suicidal and homicidal ideation, where you think about something. You think about how you're going to kill yourself, where you're going to buy the rope, what color rope it's going to be, what time you're going to do it. And I think just to find out if he was on any mental health drugs is another piece we all need to find out. But I definitely, my personal thing is I cannot make a judgment on his behavior because I have no facts on it. But I do know as a black man living here in New York City, I have seen since I was 14 years old, I've been personally interacted on such a deep level from the police to schools to health, and it's just in your face on a constant, regular basis. And I can see where a person who feels so strongly about their name and their character that is associated with that, you can do that to a person. You can actually, people are not understanding what they're doing in this country with that racism thing.
Thank you very much, Paul. Thank you so much for your insightful comments today. Thank you. Clara from Philly, your thoughts?
Thank you, Eutrice.
Thank you.
I'm calling because I can relate so well to the feelings that this man might have had. There's so many levels, as you said. As a black person, you're constantly bombarded with hostility. And he was a very intelligent and proud person, and he had served his country and all of that. Then he tried to do the right thing by being a whistleblower, which today targets you for all kinds of persecution. And so this is a mental, and I'm a mental health professional, I don't think that this is a mental health situation. Of course, he was pushed to the edge by circumstances, but he went to the edge trying many other things. He went to court after the decision was made in the department. That's lost in a lot of the discussion. He did try. And I think this is kind of like a bellwether for what we might face in the future in terms of people just pushing back, sometimes irrationally, mm-hmm. but based on reality.
You know, these are very deep discussions, you know, and it's not just the incident. We have to look, of course, we look beyond the incident, and we see that there are all these different things at play, and so much of it, you can literally put yourself, transport yourself into the scenario, because you say sometimes you yourself may go over the edge and you wonder, my gosh, what brought me here?
Yeah.
You know, if you were to be asked about a month or two before you did something that nuts, you'd say, of course I wouldn't do something like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, then you see the likelihood that you are not always 100% in charge of yourself. But here is a man who he just laid it out. I mean, he wrote it down. This is what is going to happen. And this is where I am going to draw the line. And this is how I am going out. What, from a mental health perspective, does that say about a person?
To me, it says that he's cognitively intact. He based his, I didn't read the manifesto, but I've heard a lot about mm-hmm. it. There were many facts, some of that have been corroborated in terms of how he was treated. Suicide thoughts are not always caused by mental illness. I mean,
mm-hmm.
My grandfather decided he was going to die when he found out he wouldn't walk again. He was 84. He planned his death by starving himself.
Well, I have to say this. The engineer is telling me the lines are all crammed, and so we can't deal with all of the traffic today. So clearly, we have to continue this discussion tomorrow, Clara.
All right.
If you don't mind. But thank you so much. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Bye.
That tells us that people are engaged in this discussion. And so we will do as you ask. We will pursue this again tomorrow because, as I said, the engineer said to me that the lines are all crammed and people want to have a chance to talk about it. So I want to thank you all for making such wonderful conversation today. This is a learning process. Everybody learns. And I really am deeply appreciative of the fact that you make such a strong effort to present the best of your thoughts. Thank you for being with me today. Tomorrow, of course, same thing. We will proceed. I will organize our program so we do this again tomorrow. If you wish to speak about it, let's do just that. Coming up next is Richard Wolff with Economic Update. You can certainly continue the discussion with me at leadstories@gmail.com. And I sincerely thank you for the pleasure and privilege of your company today. Bye-bye.